Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Adam and the Ants, Kings of the Wild Frontier.
Oh, Adam Ant.
Adam Ant, yeah. Okay, so I believe it's sort of like a new wave.
Yes, I do believe so.
Sort of thing.
In fact, I am adamant that it is.
that's where he got the name. So this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, hooking up with Malcolm McLaren was a pivotal moment for Adam Ant. Since the manager not only introduced Ant to the thundering, infectious Burundi drum beat that became his signature, he stole his band too. Adam and the rest of the Ants had just worked up how to exploit the Burundi style when McLaren pirated the boys off to support Annabelle Lewin in Bow Wow Wow. Using the very same sound they had developed with Adam Ant, it was now a race to get that sound into the stores first, and Adam lucked out when he joined forces with guitarist Marco Peroni, who quickly proved to be invaluable. Ant and Peroni knocked out a bunch of songs that retained some of the dark artiness of Dirk Weir's White Sox, largely anchored by those enormous Burundi beats and given great irresistible pop hooks, plus a flash sense of style. As the new Ants dressed up in something that looked like American Indians with a velveteen touch of dandy fop, it was a brilliant gonzo move, something that quickly overshadowed Bow Wow Wow, and the resulting record, Kings of the Wild Frontier, is one of the great defining albums of its time. There's simply nothing else like it, nothing else that has the same bravado, the same swagger, the same gleeful self-aggrandizement and sense of camp. This walked a brilliant line between campiness and art house chutzpah, and it arrived at precisely the right time, at the forefront of New Wave, so Adam and the Ants exploded into the British popular consciousness. If image was all that they had, they would have remained a fad, but Kings of the Wild Frontier remains a terrific album because it not only has some tremendous songs, the title track and Ant Music are classic hits, while Killer in the Home and Physical, in brackets, You're So, are every bit their equal. But because it fearlessly imperceptibly switches gears between giddy and ominous, providing nothing short of a thrill ride in its 13 songs. That's why it still sounds like nothing else years after its release.
All right.
Fascinating. Okay. So I think I only know one song from Adam Ant, and it's that Goody Two Shoes song. Oh. I don't know much of his other stuff.
Didn't he play Live Aid?
Probably. But so this was released on November 7th, 1980. Genres are new wave, pop punk, and pop. Label is CBS and Epic and internationally, produced by Chris Hughes. And if you're listening along, we encourage you to listen along. I've linked the album in the show notes in both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can easily find the album there. So if you're listening along with us, we pause halfway through and discuss like at the midway point. So the first side starts with Dog Eat Dog and ends at Killer in the Home. So we'll stop at Killer in the Home and discuss halfway through. And so without further ado, so here is Kings of the Wild Frontier and the first song, Dog Eat Dog. So here we go.
All right.
Dog
Okay, and ending side one with Killer in the Home. I'm really liking this a lot, actually. It's very different. The rhythm is very different. I like that it's not just a straight backbeat. They're using, I can't remember what the Burundi drum beat.
Yes.
The Burundi beat. Very cool. Because when I think of new wave, I think of stuff like Talking Heads and Elvis Costello and B-52s and stuff like that. And this is very not that.
Yeah. Although it still sounds very British, except that drum beat definitely makes it stand apart. It's some of the songs I'm really into for sure. I thought Ants Invasion was a pretty cool song.
Ants Invasion was cool. Yeah. I was just reading, apparently he wrote that after seeing a bad sci-fi movie. So this is on songfacts.com. Speaking with the NME on February 23rd, 2013, Adamant said that a lot of his lyrics just come out of the blue sometimes. He added, like for Ants Invasion, I'd seen this science fiction film about a monster that was a big omelet. So that was originally called The Omelet from Outer Space.
Yeah, that's a bad movie.
Yeah.
It's probably amazing, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is honestly, this is just, it's just fun. And I think that's something that I do remember seeing a little more of Adam Ant, and just this, he looked like he was dressed as a pirate. And that was sort of the image that he had in those days. I guess they call it the new romantic era. I think Duran Duran had that sort of thing going on earlier in their career. It was just when MTV was starting. And music videos were starting to come around. And he obviously not taking himself too seriously. And it's cool because this band, Adam and the Ants, they have two drummers, actually. And that's sort of why the
Burundi beat.
The Burundi beat
works with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have two drummers, it's a little bit, because there's a lot of drumming going on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two drummers, it's easier to sort of cover all that without them getting too tired. So it is an expensive touring.
Yes, it is lugging two drum kits around. Yes.
Two full drum kits. Yeah.
Yeah. You were saying you liked Ants Invasion, and I think Dog Eat Dog was they're all really good songs.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I thought the guitar part in Feed Me to the Lions was really good.
Yeah,
I really liked that. It was really interesting how it sort of, I don't know, it was almost discordant at times. It was very cool, though.
Yes.
I thought it was a really clever guitar part.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it was very, very cool. And I'm very surprised that I'm liking this album so much, because I only really knew the one song from Adam Ant.
I was going to say something about the guitar part in Killer in the Home, I think.
The guitar part in Killer in the Home sounded like that Link Ray song.
Yes.
Rumble.
Rumble.
Yeah. They were sort of borrowing that riff. And it worked. It actually worked really well in the song with the drums and everything. Yeah. It almost gave it like a spaghetti Western sort of vibe.
Yeah,
which I thought was cool. And, you know, it is almost identical to the Link Ray song, except it doesn't go to the A chord. Chord. It goes
third time. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a cool riff, and it works really well in that song.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess we'll move on to the second side of the album, and it starts with the title track, Kings of the Wild Frontier. So here we go.
Yep.
All right. And ending the album with The Human Beings. Yeah, I mean, still really good songs. It's pretty consistent the whole way through.
Yeah, I noticed it almost seems a little bit slapdash the way it was assembled, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's almost stream of consciousness sort of things going on.
Yeah, I think that's part of its charm.
Yeah, I think so too. I wasn't completely sold on it at first, but I think it's just it. It's just kind of, I don't know. It's cool though.
Yeah. I think it's just a fun pop record, really. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, I don't think it's much deeper than that. But the songs are like he is taking the songwriting seriously. Like the first song, Dog Eat Dog, apparently I was just reading it was about, like, that was taken from a, it's an old phrase, but it was inspired by a quote from Margaret Thatcher. But he's like taking these things, like he's a serious songwriter, but within that, I think he's like they're creating like this interesting music around it. And I keep going back to the rhythm of it and just how like it's odd that they would choose that to
sort of center their sound around,
especially Malcolm McLaren, who he's famous for managing like the Sex Pistols, and he's this,
yeah,
like music guy who puts together these groups, and he put together these guys, and you know, it's, I don't know if he's a genius or if he's a sleazeball or if he's both or what. Like, because he's not the most ethical person.
Yeah.
But he kind of knows what he's doing. But it's so strange that he would develop this sound and be able to sell it, to be able to market it to the point where it's one of the, you know, it ends up on the greatest albums lists. It's just it like this came out in 1980, and 1980 was when like punk and new wave especially, and this is considered new wave.
Yeah, punk had already been around for a while, but new wave was supposed to be sort of like the palatable punk to the masses, sort of.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of known like I was saying, like Elvis Costello, these short punchy songs.
Yeah.
And like all of a sudden here comes this, and it's like these strange rhythms, and it's like these weird lyrics and this like odd guitar sounds, some of them like really distorted guitars, some of them
there's
like
a lot of
really rocking
noise
guitars
too.
Yeah, a lot of chaos, and
yeah.
And then, like, I can't remember what song it was. I think it was Don't Be Square, Be There. It started off as, like, this disco thing, but then it did this weird, like, guitar riff that went up an octave each time, and it was like, that's weird, and I liked it. It was cool, but it was like, what's going on here? It seemed very out of place to have, like, a disco-type song. And then it's like, and then that happened. It's like, okay, this kind of makes sense here. It's kind of, that was the one outlier, I think, in terms of like, this is totally different from, but then it's sort of like, okay, that with that guitar riff, it's like, yeah, that makes sense now. Okay. So yeah. Okay. I can get behind that. And then it went into the Burundi beat. It just started off very weird, but it's nothing is really like this, like before. No. Like it didn't really start a trend of imitators. I could be wrong, there might be like people who try to imitate this sound, but I can't think of any examples off the top of my head.
No, it's funny how it's new wave and yet it's still so different than anything else that came out at the same time. I mean, sort of that vocal tonality is still very new wave and very especially British 80s sort of thing. I was just like, but the everything else is, I don't know, just got this very different sort of, I don't know, I guess like the guitars still have that sort of new wave thing, but they're doing different things. It's very, it is very strange, but it's not a, but that's not a bad thing.
It's not a, no, not at all. It's not, yeah, the vocals are new wave, but it's hard to really put it in a genre because it's not, it's sort of genreless. It's sort of its own thing, even though it was sort of, I guess, marketed as new wave, but that was just to sell it. But like, it's just, and I guess the other thing that, like, I guess this group, there was another group called Bow Wow Wow, and they, I think this band and that band are the same, but just with different singers. And as far as I can, and they had a hit with a cover of I Want Candy from the 80s. That was basically this band doing essentially the same thing. And it sort of goes back to the sort of a Bo Diddley thing, which is, I think, where he got that rhythm. Like, that is very, like, the Bo Diddley beat is very influenced by African Burundi beat as well. So it's not unique to rock and roll, even, this sort of, like, that sort of heavy, busy beat. But they're not doing Bo Diddley here. And so it's sort of like inspired by that, but they're doing something totally different. Not totally different, but like different enough. So yeah, so it's just, I think this might have been a bigger hit in England than it was in North America, because I don't know any of these songs. I'd never heard any of these songs before, but I think
I think we've basically covered the bases for it. So,
so that brings us to the question: would you listen to this again?
I think I might have to. Probably. I think so. Give me a little bit of time though, because the chaos sort of gets into your head, and you kind of have to like shake it out a little sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is a little all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was still kind of fun. Certain parts of it I really enjoyed, and other parts of it I was sort of kind of blindsided by a little bit. But I think overall it's actually pretty good.
I feel the same. I would definitely listen to it again. I'm pretty impressed. Surprisingly, didn't expect much from Adamant, to be honest. But I'm glad that I heard this, and I think, yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with our review of the album. You can go to the contact page at polyphonicpress.com, just polyphonicpress.com/contact. And if you want to help out the show, you can do that all by also going to the website at the support page, polyphonicpress.com/support. You can sign up for a Patreon or buy me a coffee or any way you can support the show, and even just share the show with your friends and spread the word. That would be much appreciated so we can continue doing these deep dives into these albums. And yeah, I think that all the links for everything is in the show notes. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.